When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Well, hello and welcome to the season premiere of Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock, alongside Wei Ting. Hello, Wei. Welcome to the September 9th edition of the show.
Well, I was going to say, what season exactly are we premiering here?
You know what? You know what season we're promoting? The season of change when it comes to Raw. I am, like, over the moon, so happy. Like, when I saw this, I thought it was a joke, and all I can say is that people have been listening to me for a long time, I assume, if you're tuning in on Rewind to Raw, the majority of which have been allocating time to watching these three-hour Raws. And yes, there have been ups and downs with this franchise since 2012 when it expanded to 3 hours, but I promise you I will be such a happier person for the 13 weeks that this show is going to be 2 hours that I just... For the life of me, they could throw me the most god-awful programming, and my caveat will be, it was only 2 hours. I'm so happy, and I can't possibly put into words what I felt when I saw Andrew Thompson post this, who broke the news to me. I actually did not see the WWE tweet when they first announced this.
The amount of congratulating that I received this evening during the show... I think it was more than like when I got married or like when my son was born, you know, so many people saying, I'm so happy for you. Happy for you and John. Pollock must be ecstatic. Oh, happy day. Truly happy for John Pollock and Wei Ting. Congrats, John Pollock and Wei Ting. Like, it's as if like, you know, we, we just like, we were freed from a long-term sentence of some sort. So,
a 633-week sentence.
600? I don't even know how to compute that. How many years is that?
Over 12 years. Oh, three-hour Raws.
12 years. I haven't seen daylight in 12 years. What's it going to feel like to be... well, I guess we'll be doing this at 10 p.m. But what's it going to feel like to be done this show at, like, I don't know, 12:30 a.m.? I'm saying this podcast.
You want to go out after? Do you want to get together on Monday nights?
I mean, I'll come over after. Now. Yeah, sure. Let's run. Or
yeah,
let's just like
let's go jogging at 1 a.m. on a Monday night in the middle of fall.
I like it. I like it. Yeah.
I'm tremendously happy about this. I am going to dread January 7th. I officially have desire.
So hold on a second.
Netflix.
Hold on a second. Do we know that it's going to go back to 3 hours for Netflix?
We don't know. We don't know what the timing of the episodes are going to be on Netflix. And we should go into some details about this because I did some number crunching just to get a sense of this. This should not be like a totally out of left field move when you look at just the financials of what this is. So this deal with USA Network and Raw, which ends at the end of September, this was announced in 2018, went into effect in 2019. The average annual value of this contract was $265 million per year. Now, typically in these contracts, $265, that's the average, and there's escalators. So we'll go with the idea they're being paid $265, but in reality, it's probably a little bit above $265, but it only emphasizes my point. So that means USA is basically spending just over $5 million per episode of Raw, per episode of Raw, which works out to be about $1.7 million per hour of Raw. That is the cost. This new deal, this short-term extension that they announced back in May for these 13 weeks was for $25 million. This was a bonus for WWE because they had actually forecasted, they had given guidance that there would be no television revenue for that quarter. So this was found money that Raw is going to get $25 million that has fallen out of the sky for us.
Well, which they would still have to pay for production.
They're still, they still have to produce the shows, but they're being paid significantly less on like a per cap basis for this. Like you're going from $5 million a show to about $2 million per show and under $1 million per hour. So it does make sense that they are going to be producing less content for them. They're being paid a lot less by the standards of what the old contract was that was calling for 3 hours. It's also going to be 8 to 10 p.m., so you're taking away the least viewed hour of Raw, which is still a very strong hour of cable programming for USA, but it's certainly going to cushion the drop-off we see every year going against Monday Night Football because you're taking the least watched hour, and there's like the built-in theory of will there be a bit of a bounce that like a 2 hour show is a bit more palatable for people that maybe are consuming the next day or on DVR and might be more enticed to watch the flagship show live on a Monday night in a 2 hour format versus three. These are all these factors. And the other one that comes to mind is that last year against Monday Night Football, the whole season, because of the strike, you got simulcast of ESPN and ABC were carrying each week's football games. This year, there's only a select few that are simulcast. So Monday Night Football is not going to be, in theory, as detrimental as last year because you're not going to have ABC carrying the game every week on top of ESPN. So there's a number of factors here that this should be a positive for Raw, not the least of which I think is just the fan sentiment for these 13 weeks is like I in 12 years, no one has ever told me, man, I love this expansion to 3 hours. No one has ever said that to me. In fact, people have gone out of their way to just tell me that is one of the biggest deterrents for them to watch Raw on a weekly basis.
So I would have definitely agreed with that for most of these 5 years, but lately I see a lot of people actually like not really be as frustrated by the 3 hours anymore. Like there are people that are really enjoying this current product. And I've actually,
well, seen when the product is much better, which it had not been for like 10 of the 12 years in 3 hour Raws. I shouldn't say that, you know, the first year they moved to 3 hours, it actually was that was when you had the Shield, you had like your Bryans, your Punks, your Rhodes family, and they were carrying a lot of those 3 hour Raws with a lot more in-ring content. And I would say it was around maybe, you know, the post-punk period and into the mid-2010s that you really saw, especially the late 2010s where creative just hit a iceberg.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think USA feels about this?
I mean, they're not spending a crazy amount, and they're going to have the second, the number two cable program every Monday behind Monday Night Football. And they're getting it for $25 million. It is also a vehicle to promote SmackDown on top of that, which is going to be, which they are spending a ton more on than the short-term extension for Raw. But I think in this whole deal, you can look at several factors. USA is getting top cable programming for a bargain. They're getting one less hour of it on Monday. They're also committed to Fridays for SmackDown, which I would love to know more about what went into the decision-making process. Was it an amicable decision? Was that something they disagreed over? You can see the reasons WWE wants to stay on Fridays. And I would love to know the thinking on USA's part, how they feel about a Friday night program when they're spending around $285 million a year for SmackDown. And it is going to be a tougher night than if it was, say, on a Tuesday, for instance.
Certainly, yeah. But I'm very happy. Like, I think we have more than enough. But I do sense a lot of maybe diehard WWE fans feeling like there's not going to be enough room for all the talent that's on Raw. A lot of talents that don't already necessarily get featured. So I'm curious to know what they'll be cutting back on. Will there be any sort of like extra online hour that they might, you know, use the opportunity to promote just to keep, you know, their audiences engaged perhaps, and maybe stuck to the 3-hour format, knowing that they already have that sort of block of attention that they're committed to anyway.
If say speed, like we haven't heard any real comments from WWE about the success of Speed. They promoted a lot. If Twitter was going to give them money for a third hour of, like, they're not just going to do another hour of programming unless they're being paid for it. I think that would change the calculus of it. Sure. I also think, like, how much do you want to introduce that? Like, what is the format going to be on Netflix? Like, how much commercial inventory is going to be on Netflix? Is there going to be commercial inventory? There's all these questions. Like, you could have, like, a 3-hour Raw is around 2 hours and, what, 12 to 15 minutes of content time, roughly. I'm doing this off the top of my head. And if you're going to Netflix and you have a 2-hour block, like, it's not that far off the content time. Do you even have a cutoff point? Like, could there be weeks that you could go 3 hours on Netflix, and then there's other weeks we go 2 hours and 15 minutes? Are they going to have a strict out time on Netflix? Like, these are all questions we don't know.
Are they on broadcast in any other part of the world come January 1st for Raw?
There will be some. Yeah, there will be some international.
So you still have to format the show for those markets.
Yeah. But I mean, Netflix is going to be like, it will certainly be significant changes that you're going to see to just the overall presentation of it from like, it is a chance for them to update a lot when it comes to the look and feel, and you've already seen that this year. I see that dramatically increasing as well when they shift over. But yeah, that was obviously the big story today. So they will move to the 2-hour format beginning October 7th, which is the first week after the existing deal ends, and they will run through until the finale on USA December the 30th.
All right.
Tony Khan, he spoke at the All Out press conference. This was a record for the shortest AEW press conference in its history. They did kind of like a post-show format with several of their on-camera personalities. And then Tony Khan came out. He spoke for 15, 20 minutes, had to get going. The Jacksonville Jaguars were getting set to lose to the Miami Dolphins the next day. And here is Tony Khan, who was very anxious to talk about the media rights deal and how close things are in terms of an announcement forthcoming.
We're still in very, very close and exciting negotiations with Warner Brothers Discovery. It's been going on throughout the summer that we've been having these conversations, and it's a very detailed package that we're having discussions about. AEW's grown so much. And I said last night here in the arena, I think it's safe to say I believe AEW is here to stay on TNT and TBS. And I think that's true for a very long time, and I believe it. I have not put pen to paper. I'm still working on things. It's an exciting time without getting too specific, but while giving everybody that anticipation of things to come, there's really exciting things to come in AEW, and I'm very grateful to have the support of Warner Brothers Discovery, TNT, and TBS.
If you had to assign a probability, you know, and answer only in a number, that there would be some sort of a deal announced, say, the next month or so, what would you pen that number to be?
Did you say like a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, no, like as a percentage, like, you know, 50%, 100% that something will be announced or come out in the media in the next month or so.
90%.
So we got a clear-cut percentage out of him. So let's do some recapping of Tony Khan math. So there is a 90% probability that we will get an announcement within the next month regarding the TV deal. And we have gone from the red zone to the 1-yard line, which on a 100-yard field would be at the 99% mark of scoring this touchdown in theory. Mm-hmm. So we're 99% at the deal, 90% of this happening within the next month, with the caveat that there will be an announcement in the next month. It could be an announcement about a future announcement.
We're close is the bottom line.
I think so. Yeah, I would say that it's been very evident that Tony Khan, he has always projected a very positive outlook for his company and this TV deal. But I think you can see based on the comment he made after Rampage went off the air to the crowd in Chicago that they expect to be here for a long time on TNT and TBS, and how forthcoming he was at the press conference, that it seems as though this is very, very close. This is imminent. I think imminent would be the proper wording to use. And I think this is now less a question about where they are going to be landing. And we can't dispute the fact, like, there could be a breakup of packages, but I think everyone assumes like a lion's share of this to end up with in the WBD family. But then where are things dispersed? What to make of the pay-per-view component to this? Will that be attached to Max? I mean, we could have a week in pro wrestling where fans are told that Raw is moving to 2 hours and AEW pay-per-views will come with your streaming subscription if you're in the U.S.
It's possible. Sure. Yeah.
We're raising our pay-per-view prices to $100 a show.
Yeah. It could be a very, very eventful month, eventful week, maybe even for professional wrestling fans. I mean, there's really not that much to comment on other than, you know, we should be expecting a big announcement very soon. And from that point on, let's see what the details are. I'm curious to know what Shockwave is.
He confirmed that AEW is about to shock the world.
Sure. Yes. I'm curious to know what it means. If there are any sort of other deals that he might be working on with other networks, and what it means for Ring of Honor, if there are future plans for that, and what it means for the streaming rights. So a lot of things that we are waiting to comment on, and until then, I mean, we can only speculate.
One question of probability. Tony Khan got one. I'm going to ask you one. Of these three options, okay, you just pick one.
Yeah,
that is most likely in 2025 to be formatted in a 3-hour block. Raw on Netflix, SmackDown on USA on Fridays, or a Wednesday night. I'll just say an AEW block, period. That's a 3-hour block regardless of night of the week. Which would you expect is most likely to be programmed for 3 hours on a weekly basis next year?
Are you asking what I would prefer myself or what I
expect? No, what you think.
I think it'll be Raw. I think Raw will stay at a 3-hour mark. I imagine it's part of the deal that Netflix wanted to sign. You know, we want this this many hours of content. You've conditioned your audience for the past 12 years to stick around for 3 hours anyway. So let's keep it at that. It's what we paid for. It's what we want. But at the same time, I wouldn't be that surprised if Dynamite suddenly announced an additional hour, if it means that much more. It really is, if you're AEW looking for the next best place to put content to garner the biggest audience, the hour after Dynamite, unfortunately, is the best chance. So it wouldn't terribly surprise me, but it would disappoint me.
Well, if they do expand to a 3-hour AEW block, they're certainly not going to be leaning on Friday's numbers as evidence that this is a great idea, because we knew AEW was probably going to get destroyed on Friday. SmackDown was not exactly knocking them dead either, and I think this really speaks to the power of the NFL, which, unless you were in the local markets for the Green Bay Packers or Philadelphia Eagles, the only way to watch this game was on Peacock. And still, and this does include the local markets, they did 14.2 million viewers for this game on Friday night, and I think you have to look at that as the ultimate contributing factor to SmackDown doing its second lowest number in the history of its 5 years on Fox. What a way to go out. 1,770,000 viewers and a 0.45. The only show to do lower was a best of show on December 30th last year. And that much of a fall, a 16% drop in the demo, still allowed SmackDown to finish number one for the night. So that would be That would probably be your WWE press release headline.
Yeah, we're number one.
So they'd still finished first. And in Canada, the show ended up doing its largest number since the Friday going into WrestleMania. So not as much affected by the NFL was Sportsnet 360 viewers. 274,700 viewers for Friday's program. AEW did a 3.5-hour block on TNT, beginning with Collision, head-to-head with both the Peacock game and SmackDown, both of which I think were going to take a hit, but you know, in particular, being head-to-head with SmackDown was not going to be ideal. Lowest numbers in Collision's history with 157,000 viewers and a 0.04 in the demo, which were just down huge amounts from the previous Saturday. And Rampage did have a bit of an increase from last week's terrible number. They did 233,000 viewers for the 10 to 11 hour and a 0.08 in the demo. So they did manage to double the demo number for Collision. This was going against a portion of the football game, but of course did not have SmackDown in the way. And
but it had the first quarter lead in from the main event.
They had the first quarter, the All-Star 8-man bled into Rampage, which was we haven't seen the quarters yet. I'm sure Brandon Thurston will likely have those. I'm sure that was the most watched quarter of Rampage and probably subsided from there.
You might be getting some of the SmackDown audience that was tuning off and, you know, seeing Bryan Danielson on the other channel might have decided to stick around as well. So
maybe some people tuning in and be like, hey, I just saw Neville and Chris Jericho on Beast in the East. And here's Neville in AEW.
Yeah. And here's Chris Jericho trying to steal bags.
Yeah, I mean, a whole new world that you could have discovered. Yeah,
only the first of two bag angles we had in AEW.
And our last notes, Tuesday night, NXT. It will be the season premiere of NXT on USA Network. And do you know what they're going up against, Quay?
The presidential debate? Is that tomorrow?
That is right. 9 p.m., it's Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. Will you be tuning into the debate?
No, because I'll be talking about Madam Web.
Oh, boy.
Man, fuck.
What would be more painful, watching the debate or talking about Madam Web?
I'm really excited to see this debate. So,
I'm going to watch the debate myself. Yeah. But if you are tuning into NXT, it is a pretty loaded show that they have. A last man standing match between Pete Dunne and Trick Williams. Ridge Holland starts to go through Chase U by taking on Duke Hudson. Charlie Dempsey defends the Heritage Cup against Javon Evans. Jordan Grace will host another open challenge for the Knockouts title. Julia makes her NXT debut against Chelsea Green. And a last-minute switch they have made. Axiom and Nathan Frazier are no longer facing the Rascals. Instead, they had Ava post a video that the Rascals are out due to somewhat conspicuous circumstances, she stated, and the Street Profits are in. I was really disappointed that we got the switch here because that was match I was most looking forward to on this show. So I'm sure they will do their follow-up, whatever. It does sound angle-related, but I don't know what the story is there of why they did the switch.
Yeah, I don't either. I imagine we'll learn a lot more. It could just be storyline, could be real world reasons. But the fact that Ava framed it that way tells me that they're going to fold it into an angle. So I'm curious to see how Julia looks, you know, in her NXT debut. I'm not expecting this match to go that long, but I do expect maybe a bit more. Maybe a few more bells and whistles to her entrance and what's to come after the match, of course. Also curious to know who answers the Jordan Grace open challenge.
And Dynamite, are you right? Do I have time to roll through the whole lineup for Wednesday?
I don't know, man. It's only an hour podcast.
Okay, it's Lexington, Kentucky at the Rupp Arena, which is a building that capacity is listed here as 23,500 it can hold. It has not sold that many tickets, to say the least. John Moxley is set to appear.
All right. I'm trying to scroll down on the cage match here to see what the matches are. And none announced yet, but they are coming off of a really hot pay-per-view that's got a lot of people talking. And I think most of the time that alone should be enough to get people's interest. But I guess
they didn't get the bump off All In, and that was about as noteworthy a show. I understand coming off the pay-per-view, you're not always going to have like a crazy deep lineup.
We find out what was in the syringe. We will see the remnants of the plastic bag.
Jim, if they had promoted Jim Ross confronts John Moxley about the plastic bag, that would be enough. Rupp Arena wouldn't be big enough.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I imagine tomorrow or Wednesday afternoon, go to Tony Khan's Twitter. I'm sure he'll be blasting out everything that's to come.
Well, that's great, but I don't know how many people in Lexington are going to be keeping their Twitter refreshed to determine if they're going to go to this show or not. But we will see what the follow-up is. It was a very, very noteworthy show on Saturday night, which we do have a review, big rundown of, and there was, it was a very, very well-received show, but I guess not without...
with a lot of
opinions all over the place.
Absolutely.
Have they gone too far?
I mean, which particular thing are you speaking of that they've gone too far with?
It is good when you have a multiple choice of where you could go. But I think there's stuff like this is good word of mouth to come out of a show. I don't view it as like negative.
I think it's exactly what the match was going for. If we weren't having these discussions about whether or not they were going too far, then I think they would have failed at their unsanctioned lights out stipulation.
Yeah.
You know,
so. And even the plastic bag, dude, there were people that were complaining about the plastic bag too. And you know, it was like,
made you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. I whatever. Maybe we'll talk about it more on Wednesday or maybe even later on in feedback, because it's an interesting debate to have. Sure.
All right. Way has mentioned that he'll be watching Madam Web on Tuesday night, and that show will be dropping on Wednesday.
That'll be out Wednesday morning. Yeah, we'll be recording it Tuesday night, and then it'll be released for all of you guys on Wednesday morning, whether or not you've listened whether or not you've seen Madam Web. I have a feeling we're going to get the best of myself, Rich Fan, and WH Park as we talk about I have not watched it yet. I'm going to be doing it tomorrow, but I kind of look forward to seeing what all the fuss is about.
Well, is this on Disney Plus?
I believe so. I think so.
Because I went to search and I couldn't find it, and I was not going to look further than that for Madam Web, so I don't know if I'll be watching this.
Could be, I don't know, Amazon or something, one of those other things.
Well, on Wednesday, Brandon and I will be live at 1 p.m. Eastern time. We have put out one request that if this guest accepts, it'll be wonderful if we can have this person join us.
Oh, interesting. A mystery.
So I don't want to tease anyone because they haven't replied yet. An open challenge. Yes, I did put out the open challenge. And yes, we'll be live at 1. And then Thursday, Wei and I are getting together in one of our backyards, and we are going to record Talk. As simple a description as we can provide you.
I mean, I don't know if it's backyard weather anymore, John.
Like, it's a little cold.
It's gotten really chilly lately. So, we'll have our coffees. We'll be chatting. And these are always enjoyable for me to do. And they seem to be some of your favorite podcasts that we release exclusively for the patrons, because we don't really have any agenda. We just turn the mics on and just kind of speak about what's going on in our personal lives, how we feel about the business, our business, you know, in post wrestling. And it's just like, it's enjoyable, like honest. We try to be as honest as we can, I guess, with each other.
So that's dropping Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com. And then this weekend, just some highlights. We will have a review. Myself and Eric Marcotte are going to be covering Noche UFC, and Sunday night, it's the return of the NWA podcast.
All of those guys have a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on.
Yes. I figure they could just get enough out of Hulk Hogan on Logan Paul. And
Hulk Hogan alone.
Yeah. I mean, they have done a show since the convention, but
they haven't done one since the Kamala Harris comment.
You're right. I don't think they've done one since then. So,
a million things have happened in the world since then, and a million things will happen between now and Sunday. So, yeah, always a great listen. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Follow along at postwrestling.com tonight.
Thank you, everybody, for signing up. We're past 18,000 on the YouTube. So talking about this stuff evidently works. Get us to 20, all right, everybody, okay? I'm greedy, you know? I can't rest, all right? We always have something more to strive for. Happiness never, never, never rests, okay? We strive for more. Let's get us to 20.
Let's get to 20, everybody. All you have to do is hit the subscribe right in front of you.
Just and if you're listening on the podcast, leave us a nice little review either on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you might be checking this out.
It's always wonderful to hear from people out there as we make our way into your ears.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Tonight, we are making our way to Calgary, Alberta, at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Scotiabank, the pretty much as it's kind of going to just be Scotiabank Canada is what our country is eventually going to be rebranded as.
Yeah.
If Rogers doesn't get it, Scotiabank will.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll just live in Scotiabank. That's what our country will be named after.
Yeah, that'll be our national motto. Will be we're richer than we think.
Which I don't think is true at all.
No. Russell Ticks, last update was 8,476 tickets out, and we get the arrivals, and then there's Brett walking in the back, and this thunderous roar for Brett appearing in Calgary that the show was really based around over the weekend, of Bret Hart on WWE programming.
Yeah, it tells me that we haven't seen Brett on WWE TV in quite a while, because this graphic that they have of him, I mean, the man still had his, I guess, at least colored brown hair. And like, this must have been from his run with Vince, right?
Oh, yeah. I would think that this is at least over a decade old, this photo.
Yeah, yeah. Because now he's looking like Jimmy Page, you know, like in 2024. So... Well,
lots to say about the Brett segment, but we are kicking off with American Made and the Wyatt Six in a street fight with the announcement this afternoon that the first hour commercial free.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just in case the thing is though, you're still getting the same amount of content. They just kind of put all the commercials at the back. So yeah.
Tons of heat for American Made as they come out with the American flag, and it's Gacy, Rowan, Loomis, and Nikki Cross that take part in the match. Although Uncle Howdy would get involved after just spending most of the match on his rocking chair. This guy's got like the easiest gig here in the thing. Comes in for the finish.
I mean, he's got to do a lot of the work. He does all the talking. He has to film all those vignettes in the back. I mean, I'm sure it's not that easy.
Well, there was one or two kendo stick shots in this match, or 1,000.
This match was significant because it was Nikki Cross's first match. In fact, it's her first match since November of 2023.
Wow.
That's how inactive she's been. But this is also the first time, to my knowledge, that I think she's unmasked to reveal, I guess, her kind of face painted face.
Yeah, she looked good in the brief interactions that she had. Niall used a fire extinguisher onto Eric Rowan. They got chairs involved. And then we had Rowan slam through the table on the floor by the Creeds, and they buried him under weapons. So then Gacy got a trash can placed over his head, and they started attacking that with kendo sticks when Cross emerges from under the ring to attack Niall. And Rowan comes back after the table spot by grabbing a piece of the barricade, and he uses this as a weapon, which was new. Gacy and Loomis, then this was our unfortunate Joe Tessitore moment of this match, where they hit a pair of double uranagis, identified as double choke slams. And then Loomis hits a leg drop off the top to Brutus through a table on the floor. Gable comes, scales up to the top and hits an angle slam to Gacy off the top through a table as Uncle Howdy is watching. And Gable applies the ankle lock. Niall is in using the kendo stick on Gacy at the same time when Cross yanks out Niall. And then Ivy Niall German suplexes Gable for the big pop. And Rowan hits a claw slam to him. Uncle Howdy is in with Sister Abigail on Julius. And Loomis splashes Gable off the top and pins him as the Wyatt Six get the win in the kind of match that I think is best suited for a Wyatt Six wild, insane brawl. I don't think this is an act that would work well with, honoring the tag rope.
No, not at all. Yeah, I thought they could a continued successful presentation of this group. They are really kind of avoiding all the mistakes that I think we've seen from the Bray Wyatt experiments, and they're finding the best ways to present and protect this group to the point where they still, months in now, still feel special, and they're still garnering some of the biggest reactions on the show. And for all the doubters that, you know, felt that, hey, like, this is all building up to a Nikki Cross and Joe Gacy and Dexter Loomis, you know, match, it's working. You know, like, all these guys in this group, without even, Uncle Howdy wrestling tonight, they're getting fantastic reactions, and it's not just for the characters, it's for the wrestling, too. You know, they're crafting these, like, matches where I think they just really get to shine, and I'd be lying, I would say, if I said, like, maybe my expectations for, like, street fights weren't slightly elevated after the last show I watched on Saturday. So I don't know if this hit me as hard as like it seemed to hit for the people in Calgary, but the live reaction to all that they were doing was really tremendous. They were chanting holy shit for like things that you would not expect to get those sort of chants. So there, what I love especially about I think this presentation is the fact that having each character retain their backstories as their original human selves, they're called Dexter Loomis, Nikki Cross, and Eric Rowan. It takes away the expectation for them to be these sort of like invulnerable, no-selling like creatures. So in these matches, as baby faces, they can get hurt, they can look tired, they can be imperfect. Not everything has to look amazing, or at least perfectly executed, because they're human beings, and it's, you know, they're human beings that are just inspired by these sort of acts. So I think it's really helping them, and I think the win was necessary because they still need to be protected as a group. I would go as far as to say they should be protected as a group that never loses, so that their appearances continue to feel special and threatening.
They are WWE's version of Sting, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then we get the first announcement for Bad Blood next month with Liv Morgan defending the women's title against Rhea Ripley for Atlanta. And we would get several more match announcements for that show. Finn Balor comes out on his own and he tells Damian Priest that it didn't have to be this way. You're the one who screwed the Judgment Day. And the more I tried to help, the more you held me down. And he fought through the what chance as he says, I always had your back and made sure that you'd stayed champion, even though I should have been champion if not for you always lurking around with the briefcase and screwing me. So he calls out Damian Priest.
By the way, what is FXXX supposed to mean?
That's just his nickname. Fuck.
All over his... Is that what we're supposed to be thinking about? So for people that are just listening, didn't watch Raw, like Balor comes out now. His new branding is in big capital letters on a screen, FXXX. So that's his new nickname?
Yeah, it's adult content.
Okay, interesting. Interesting.
Priest storms out and threatens to drop his ass, and he's at least going to allow Balor to say his piece first. Balor says that you turned me into a sidekick. I'm no sidekick. So the crowd chants sidekick. And he says that you and Rhea are going to fall on the same night at Bad Blood as he challenges Damian Priest. Priest accepts the match for Bad Blood. And then Balor reminds him about the Judgment Day playbook. Priest is like, I wrote the playbook. And Judgment Day attack him 4-on-1. He might have written the playbook, but he has not read the playbook in quite some time because he got beaten down. It was 4-on-1 when Rhea Ripley is trying to sprint down the aisle on one crutch while hobbling. And this was like quite the visual. And she gets down the aisle. Liv runs down right into a shot from the crutch. And then Rhea nails Dom with the crutch, but eventually Liv chop blocks her. They beat down Priest and Ripley, and we got the dreaded local medical facility that Damian Priest was taken to based on this attack.
Yeah, well, a lot of crutch shots. Yeah. Well, and then Jey Uso made the save.
Jey Uso came out at the end of this. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very hot segment, but I felt it was pretty standard, you know, to build to their singles matches. Turned out well. I guess standard is fine, you know, when you have over characters and an over storyline. But it's sort of the same game we've been playing this entire time. Somebody comes out, they get beaten down, and then they seek revenge, and we get our match.
And Priest gets his experience with Canadian healthcare.
Sure, yeah. He might have to, I don't, would he have to pay for it, I guess, as an American? He's not a citizen, right?
I think if it was, he would be taken care of.
Oh, by the company. You're right, yeah.
Jackie is with Braun Strowman. He's still banged up from the tsunami on the car 2 weeks ago. And last week's match didn't help matters, but I'm not making excuses. And Braun Breaker walks in and looks up and down and confirms, you are a monster, but I'm a dog, big man. And the only reason that you're standing here is because you never stepped into the ring with me. So I hope you win, you big sob.
You know, he's trying to introduce something he can brand, okay, and put on a t-shirt. Maybe you big sob. Wait, isn't it? Isn't that on
sob.
His shirt? Isn't that what's on Braun's shirt? Isn't that Braun's branding?
Yeah. He's calling it.
Oh, so he's reading it sob instead of SOB.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, what a lovely shirt this is.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been to WWE shop today?
I have not. No. What am I missing?
I think you should go there right now.
Okay.
If it's not on the main page, then it's a big
thing. I'm on the Canadian store. I don't know if... Let's navigate it together. Why not? Let's go to www.shop.ca. Is this what you're talking... Wait,
I'm not
talking
about belts.
What you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about a $10 item that has made its way onto WWE shop.
I need to go to the .com? Okay. Oh, okay. Let's do this off air. It's okay. Fine.
Well,
just tell me what I'm missing here.
You can now spend $9.99 to get your own official CM Punk friendship bracelet that comes with beads that read Larry and AJ.
Wow. Okay. Okay, I got it here. $10? I mean, considering
I think they're undercharging here. There's going to be fans that buy this. I mean, nothing really speaks to the sentimentality of this bracelet than, you know, capitalism at its finest here. So you can buy your own AJ and Larry friendship bracelet.
Okay. Well, does the fan who actually made this, the initial one, does she get any royalties off of this?
The same royalties that SummerSlam winner got for their t-shirt design.
Maybe free trip.
Tickets to a show.
I'm sure Punk's taking good care of her. Yeah. All right. Well, you would have expected it. Let's read the description here. CM Punk keeps a reminder of his love for his wife and furry four-legged family member, Larry, in the form of a friendship bracelet. Take a trinket that reminds you of your loved ones wherever you go, like the Second City Saint does, by making the CM Punk friendship bracelet yours. One look at this accessory lets everyone know You'd fight to get your piece of flesh if anyone questions your loyalty to those you hold dear. God bless the people who have these jobs that have to write these descriptions. Yeah. That's a great description for a French
person. I love that you can think of your loved ones by looking down and reading Larry AJ on your wrist.
So what? So I can't customize it? Like, does it come with the other letters?
Do they offer customization? I think for $10, you're not getting a customization of letters.
I guess so.
You're getting the standard here. Okay. So I hope you have people in your life with those.
So what's CM Punk so mad about? Like, he just get one off for $10.
He's going to mass produce these.
Yeah.
Okay. It's what it means. It's what it represents. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair versus the Unholy Union for the women's tag titles. Fire chop block Jade's knee, so she immediately tagged out. They didn't even get the heat on her for all that long. Unholy Union double team and powerbomb Belair, go for a double suplex, but Jade stops them. And Fire and Dawn go for their finisher, the gory special flatliner combo, but Belair is in for the save, and Jade fires off a pump kick, and they hit their finish, the wheelbarrow suplex DDT combo, and Jade pins Fire in 6 minutes and 37 seconds, extinguishing this feud.
You would think so. Yeah. Not much heat for this one.
No.
They tried something a little bit different here with Jade building to Belair's hot tag instead of the other way around, which is what we usually see. So we actually got to see Jade sell a little bit here, and her selling at this point is still very basic and very obvious. You know, ouch, my knee really hurts. Let's hold my knee. Like, but it's fine. It's fine at this point.
She's only been wrestling a year, so.
Right. Okay. But it's fine to maintain this current role in a tag team. But I still feel like we're pretty far away from like the Jade Cargill singles run with Belair. And again, it's fine. Like, she's doing great right now as part of the tag team. The problem is there's just really no tag teams for them to feud with. They're building to something with the Io and Kairi. And I'm not even that excited for that one. So, man.
Well, that's the tag division way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jackie is with the LWO backstage. The Judgment Day walk in. Ray calls them the Adams Family and leads to Ray calling them wannabe thugs and challenges Balor to a match. Balor accepts.
Wannabe Adams Family. Yeah, that works.
Yep. And then we see Bret Hart, and he is introduced by Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett, who are inside of the ring, and Bret comes out to a huge reaction in the Saddle Dome, and Joe Tessitore says how something special is going to be happening in Canada, and that special something is that on Friday, tickets go on sale for the Survivor Series in Vancouver. It's like, oh, okay. That's great. There's also a moment where it's hard to see, but it appears that as Bret gets into the ring, he looks to Wade Barrett and basically is, I think he was asking him where they need to be facing, and Barrett like pointed toward the hard camera. Bret says, "This is the place to be. There's no one that's more proud to be a Canadian champion than him. He never ducked a challenge and proved he was the best for 20 years, every night." And he is interrupted by Gunther, who comes out, and he's showing off his belt. He had so much heat from this crowd because they don't want to see anyone mess with their hero. And Gunther explains Bret is one of his childhood heroes, and this is a bit of a passing of the torch moment because you're the best there was, and I am the best there is and the best there ever was. And
ever will be.
Yeah. There ever will be. And he looks at Bret and says how me and Stu, pointing to Wade, grew up watching you. Stu.
Yeah. I thought at first it was a reference to, obviously, Bret's
No, this was father. the other Stu.
No, I think this, I don't know if he was supposed to call him that.
And then says, you know, Bret, you were one of my all-time favorites, but you were always a close second to my all-time favorite. And he just let it linger and states, my favorite was Bill Goldberg. And when he said this, I thought they were just going to go for the tired, like Shawn Michaels gag. This was so much more current
so much better.
To go this direction. It so was much great. Better.
So much better. Yes, number one, because it's so much more relevant these days. Like, this is really Bret's longest rival at this point. And it's really a rivalry from one person the other person's really not a participant at all. But this is, it's the perfect thing to say to Brett at this point. And just the idea that Gunther's, just even the sort of, I don't know, possibility that this kid loved Bill Goldberg is very amusing to me.
So we didn't get a response from Brett. I feel that within the next 6 months, we will get some Goldberg interview on some football or car related podcast, and we will get his response to this, and Andrew Thompson will find that answer for us. But then Sami Zayn has heard enough, and out comes Sami Zayn wearing a Johnny Gaudreau Flames jersey. So this elicits a huge Johnny chant in the Saddle Dome, and there would be more to come with that. And he runs down Gunther for disrespecting Brett, who's a hero to Sammy and who the talents still study today. And Brett set the tone for what it means to be a champion. I challenged you and you ran and wouldn't give me the shot. So he says, if you want to prove you're the best, then put the title on the line against me. Gunther says, my answer remains no. And Brett cannot stand this. That's because you're a coward. A dirty yellow coward. A gutless yellow coward. And Zayn confronts Gunther on the floor, and they get into a big brawl, and then Zayn returns to the ring, raising Brett's arm, and they embrace.
Yeah. I thought this was a very, very good segment. First of all, I thought Gunther and Sammy were both tremendous here. They were able to pull so much value out of Brett the Hitman Hart, who, you know, let's be honest, like he's well past his performance years. He's great in interviews that are that turn into great headlines. But he, as far as like cutting promos on like a professional wrestling stage, he's long past that part of his life. So I don't know if there's that much you could have worked with Brett, but you had Brett Hart in Calgary, and that's all you needed. The man just needed to step out there, get that reaction, and have the rest of their talents craft this scene around them. And I thought Sammy and Gunther did such a great job. They were great at building Gunther's heat with that excellent trolling line. And then Sami Zayn as Brett's defender, I don't think you could have asked for a better one. Now, you and I were, or somebody was asking, it might have been a feedbacker asking, if this would have some instead involved Drew and for the CM Punk feud heading into Raw. And I like this a lot better. For one thing, I mean, Punk wasn't on this show. He was selling. I think having, and also like the connection between Punk and Brett hasn't necessarily been made so clear, especially on WWE TV. In AEW, you can argue, yeah. But on WWE TV, I don't think they made it so clear. Whereas Sami Zayn, the Canadian, coming out in defense of the Canadian icon, I think is a lot easier to accept. They're also really successful at like paying respect to Brett's career and his legacy on WWE TV, mentioning things like, hey, the boys in the back still study this guy's tape. I'm sure Brett loved those lines. So, yeah, I really like the segment.
So they're pushing off this match, and we're already at like three matches on the Raw side for Bad Blood. And the more I think about it, does this title match, do you see them holding it off till Saudi Arabia and Sami Zayn going for the belt there?
That's an interesting thought. Yeah. Three on Raw. And that usually means what, two on SmackDown for a five match.
I mean, they're not handicapped by any number, but of late it's been five has been the number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually think that might be.
I don't know if you have to rush Gunther and Sami Zayn to this Bad Blood show, and I think they can hold it out if they have, you know, Sammy has to go through hoops to get this title match.
Yeah, yeah. When is Crown Jewel? Is that
it's not till November 2nd. So we're talking like that is like almost 2 months.
That's a long time for Gunther to be inactive. But that I think would be a place where, you know, Sammy has like five.
Or you could do one match. It doesn't even have to be a Bad Blood, but it's designed. It sets up a rematch at Crown Jewel. Like there's some like Gunther gets counted out or Gunther gets himself disqualified. Like you could do that.
I could definitely see that. Yeah, it's nice to be Sami Zayn where you have like five different hometowns in across the globe, so they have no shortage of places to
well if you're from Canada it. you've got 10 provinces and three territories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Braun Breaker runs up to Pete Dunne and Said originally, I didn't know what to think about you. What was it you used to call yourself? And Dunn does not want to hear that name. And he
They're trying really hard to get the crowd to chant Butch at him. And yeah, they didn't do it really tonight, did they?
No, they did not. It kind of felt like it had its fleeting moment as an inside joke, and it does feel a little forced upon at this point.
The parents are in on the joke now, you know.
So Dunn explains he's going to win tonight to get closer to the IC title. He's going to smash Trick Williams tomorrow, and then he's going to beat Bron Breakker and become a two-time champion with the NXT championship and the Intercontinental title. I don't think either of those things are happening.
No.
But he is thinking big. Bron says how Dunn couldn't beat him in a fight, and you always do that stupid shrug, and you're going to be asking tonight why the dogs are barking so loudly in Canada. Bron had some lines tonight. And then as Bron walks off, Sheamus appears and just drills this guy with a shillelagh. And that was worth the going through customs for Sheamus, and he was on his way back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does this affect Pete Dunne at all for tomorrow? Probably not.
I mean, he wrestled like an hour after this, so I guess he's
fine. You're right, yeah.
This wasn't that bad of a shillelagh attack.
Yeah, you might see Sheamus again tomorrow, so maybe he'll fly down to Orlando.
It's a lot of air miles to follow this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dominic Mysterio against Dragon Lee. Lee hit a double stomp after they came back from the break, and then JD places the foot on the rope to break up the cover, so Ray goes after JD. It's a brawl between the LWO and Judgment Day when Wild dives off of the barricade onto everyone. Liv Morgan chops Dragon Lee's leg from behind, and he's hit with the 619 and frog splash as Dominic wins in 8 minutes and 18 seconds. And I don't know about Dragon Lee. He's just kind of assuming a role in this group and not really stood out in a big way.
No. I don't know if I expected much more, to be honest, John. You know, like, I think there's definitely a ceiling for, like, people who just are small and can't necessarily talk big enough to make up for that. Like, he's still very much just, like, incredible high flyer, but hasn't really shown anything special in terms of personality. And I don't know if they've exactly given him a ton of chances either, but you could kind of say that for, like, a lot of these guys in the LWO that don't really have so much of an identity other than Ray and Zelina.
Belair and Cargill are in the back, and they are approached by Io Sky and the bandaged Kairi Sane, wearing the effects of last week's...
She showed us a close-up online of her stitches. They look pretty. This looked pretty rough. Brutal. Yeah.
This group has just become damaged.
Yeah, unfortunately,
we're down to like one healthy member, and they state to Jade and Bianca, "Don't get used to having those tag titles." And Jade and Bianca kind of just blew them off.
Yeah.
6 months of program here.
Yeah. They're going to try to continue to build this and keep this going in the weeks ahead. So until that time, who do we have here? What are the tag teams? We got Kaden and Katana, got the PFC.
We do have the PFC.
Some version of, like, you know, whatever Natalia and Lyra and Zelina are working together for. And that's all of that's good for at least, you know, multiple rematches, multi-man matches, and they'll, you know, figure it out.
The Canadian, Puerto Rican, Irish connection.
I'm sure there's some deal there. Yeah.
Then we had this incredible tribute to Johnny and Matthew Goudreau on the show with Joe Tessitore and Wade Barrett on camera and explaining how these two just died a few weeks ago. The funeral was earlier today, and we go outside of the Saddle Dome. It is just all Johnny Goudreau memorabilia. The fans have created this huge memorial for him, and she is like choked up as she is like doing her tribute here outside of the arena. This was spectacular. I thought that this was so classy that they did this being here in Calgary, just such a short time after his death and his brother's death. And today was, in fact, the funeral. And the fact that they took the time out to do this, I just thought this was such a classy measure on their part to do on the program.
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely surprised me. Surprised me more than I think, you know, some of the video treatments we've had for wrestlers who have passed away, because even that I think is somewhat novel, given that we haven't always seen that sort of treatment, even for people in the industry. For somebody outside of the industry to get this sort of like airtime, I found really interesting. And I do like wonder how much of this was like them recognizing, obviously they're in Calgary, but they also have like a lot of broadcasters now from sports backgrounds, including Jackie Rebman, who I think was the perfect person to do something like this. Clearly, you know, a story that greatly affected her. I think she mentioned interviewing Johnny Goudreau as well. So they saw this as like a unique opportunity to sort of present this story to an international audience. And I thought it was really, really, really well handled. So yeah, this was a really special part of the show.
The Pure Fusion Collective took on Zelina Vega, Lyra Valkyria, and the returning Natalya as Deville cut a promo mocking whoever they had as their partner. So Natalya comes out to have her first match since June, and they get the advantage on Vega after the break. And then Natalya is trying for a sharpshooter, but Vega gets pulled out of, or sorry, it's Stark that gets pulled out. And then they go for it again. And this time it's all three baby faces putting on simultaneous sharpshooters for the easy pop and submission in 6 minutes and 51 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice finish with the triple submissions. Good reaction.
She was kind of in her Trish Stratus attire here with the cowboy hat and jacket.
Oh, cowboy hat is a Calgary thing, right? I don't even know if Lyra tagged into this one.
I don't think she ever got in because Vega was in at the beginning, and then it just got to the hot tag for Natalya, and then she ended it with the sharpshooter at the end.
Yeah, honestly, beyond like the Calgary pop for these three, I wonder how much they have, because people in this sort of like mid card of the women's division just tend to not have much going on, especially if you're a babyface, you might not even get promo time. So do they have big plans for a Natalya run at this point, or is she just here to play more supporting character?
Well, I mean, circling back to our conversation at the top of the show, like remember, this is a 3-hour show, that an hour of this is going to be cut out come October. Yep. And there's going to be a lot of people that are not going to have TV time, at least on a regular basis, that are on the Raw side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if a match like this, like, obviously this was specific to where they were running, but just on an average Monday night, like, I don't know if you're getting like a cold match like this. Then we had the three of them were backstage, and Natalya was talking about how surreal it was, and Brett walks in, and this felt like impromptu of a segment as you're gonna have. Like, there was no like punchline to the segment or message delivered. It was just like Brett coming in and congratulating Natty and saying this is a Natty moment, this isn't a Brett moment. And the others are just like it was just almost like you were a fly on the wall here. Like, there, this wasn't like your traditional WWE segment where there was some element of story to any of this.
Yeah, no, it was really just to give Natalya, I guess, the rub from, you know, her uncle here. I could also see it being like, we could try to give something for Brett to read, but like, I don't think it would come across well. So this came across way
better. Just go and react to her winning.
Yeah, exactly.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Drew McIntyre comes out to start the third hour, and he's getting CM Punk chants, but he encourages them because now when you chant his name, it's in memory of him, and mentions how Punk screwed him out of the title 3 times this year. I pinned him at SummerSlam, and he thinks because he touched 4 corners faster than me that he's done with me. He says he's going to take credit for ending Punk's career, then promotes his movie with Dave Bautista and has to tie up one loose end. And he's got some bad news for Stu. And he eyes Wade Barrett and he goes to the floor and said how he doesn't have many friends left, but Wade is one of his oldest. We lived together. We were arrested together. And he spoke of how they both felt Punk was bad for this business, but then last week you stood in my way. And I'm not angry. I'm disappointed in you. But if you do that again, I'm not going to be disappointed, but I will be angry and I will do something about it. And Wade stands up and the crowd was getting into this like they were going to come to blows. And Pierce walks out apologizing on behalf of Drew to Wade and Michael Cole, or sorry, and Tessitore for interrupting, and brings Drew into the ring and states how I spoke to CM Punk this morning and he is not done and he is not done with you. Now, remember, the last we saw of this man, he was being wheeled out unconscious after he was rendered unconscious by Drew last week. But he's had a strong 7 days, and he's ready for a Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood, which Pierce confirms, and Tessitore noting to us the anniversary of the first Hell in a Cell on October 5th. So that is where we are going, and that brings us to 3 matches on the Bad Blood card. And this, mm-hmm. and this could be your main event of the show. I think it should be mm-hmm. the main event of the show.
Yeah, because what are our other options? Solo and Cody?
Yeah.
What else?
That certainly does not feel like it. Is Gunther going to be on this show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, Gunther. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But I would do this.
It is tough to close a show in a cage match, though, as we saw on Saturday.
Yes.
They'll have to fall.
That's great. No, I would definitely do Punk and Drew as the closer. I thought Pierce was really good in this segment. Like I continue to, I think, be like very impressed at how somebody can stay in this GM role for this long and not necessarily like make us tired of him. You know, like, is he one of the longest reigning GMs like we've had in how long, dude? Like, I feel like typically these people kind of come and go, you know, like, I don't know, in a few months. But, like, Pierce has held on to this role, and it's because he's never been too much. He's been just enough, you know, for the role, just to be able to convey the information and play the authority figure.
He's just a tool for matchmaking. Mm-hmm. He's good delivery. Like, he's a seasoned pro that knows what the role is, doesn't overshadow the people that he's in scenes with. Yeah. He's a matchmaking tool that, instead of having just the mysterious match announcements, like, you have a tool for making matches. And I would say, like, him and Nick Aldis, like, they serve their function.
They're both great. They figured out how to, like, play the GM, how to script a GM in a babyface role. And it's by making them good talkers, first of all, that helps. Just to make them sound authoritative. They often don't take shit and don't get stepped on by heels in this company. I like the both of them a lot. And Pierce especially, I thought, was good here.
Karrion Kross is with The Miz. And he tells The Miz, you're in a rut. And I was waiting for Miz to pot, meet kettle. Xavier Woods comes in and tells Miz, don't listen to him. He just wants you to think that way. And Miz acknowledges that Karrion Kross is right. Woods tries to talk him up, mentioning, you know, you headlined WrestleMania 13 years ago. Like, that's really going to be a pick-me-up. And Miz says how, Woods, you just don't understand. And so he walks off, and Kofi walks in, thinking that Xavier Woods is Brett, but Xavier explains, no, it's me. And Kingston has gotten them a tag title shot.
Yeah.
So
sure,
we're watching these guys that have gone through weeks to get to this four-way tonight. This is the division to carve yourself into, okay? Like, this is, why go through a qualifier and then a four-way? The tag division is the way to just get the title shot right away.
Oh, I mean, if you're in, you know, in the women's tag division, it's an even easier path. Yeah, it's just sort of the status. But at the same time, do we know, maybe the purses are different, John, for a tag team champion versus an IC title?
Xavier explained that it's twice the purse if we become tag champions.
It's twice the purse?
He said I thought we were going in singles directions, but it makes sense to be a team and we get double the purse money.
Because they each get paid.
Yeah.
Right. I see. Okay.
And maybe they have a combined checking account together.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure in their minds, in Woods' mind, he has like a very logical explanation for all this, and I'd love to know too. Anyway, the bigger story here is that they are continuing beyond the Odyssey Jones pivot to this destination that I think we were headed towards with Kofi and Woods anyway. I think we can clearly maybe predict that they are going to lose this tag team title challenge next week to further the descent in some way. So we'll see exactly what that is. You know, they were gaining some good momentum with the whole Odyssey Jones deal. And it, unfortunately, it's been kind of, you know, derailed for a couple weeks here. So we'll see how they pick back up. And also with The Miz and Karrion Kross, I think The Miz has kind of been flirting with, like, you know, a heel turn for a while now with R-Truth.
Oh, please put him in the final testament. I will completely change my opinion of if him and Paul Ellering are doing promos by, like, the lake, and maybe you do a satanic gimmick for The Miz, okay? That's their Kevin Sullivan tribute.
I don't know if, like, we should be happy or unhappy that, like, they're putting Karrion Kross now with an act that I don't know if a lot of people had too much interest in anyway. Maybe they'll put R-Truth in with Karrion Kross, which I think could make for some fun interactions.
Oh, we had the Purple Haze. We could get the Purple Miz. I think this could work. They're also promoting that November, it's the 10th anniversary of the New Day.
Wow. That's a long time.
Finn Balor against Rey Mysterio. Fine match, did not last too long, but we had Rey delivering his sliding splash to the floor. Then Balor caught a 619, catapult Rey's throat into the rope, and then applies a half crab in the ropes, and he won't let go and is disqualified as he destroys the knee of Rey. This, the guy just got some recent stem cells, and this probably set him back thousands. So a shotgun blast sends Rey into the post, and the idea here is that the Judgment Day, in particular Finn Balor, they are trying to heat up as this really dangerous opponent for Damian Priest at Bad Blood by taking out Priest. They took out Ripley, and they took out Rey here.
Yeah, I really do think Finn Balor needs something like this. I mean, they could have given him the win, but I guess they maybe want to delay this or just chose instead to protect Rey, who was getting taken out with this injury anyway. But Balor really does need something like this, because I would say he really still continues to have that sidekick stink about him. You know, like, I don't know if many people have perceived him as like a world title contender in quite a while now. So he needs something vicious and devastating like this. So I was in favor of it. I almost wondered if this was a setup to have Rey and Priest reunite, which I think would really help Priest, you know, just further his babyface appeal. They, of course, had some connection, you know, back when Priest started off as a babyface. So I'd like to see them maybe mend those fences and tell that story.
Jackie is with Ilya Dragunov, who is basically, he is asked, like, what are your thoughts on this match? And he's like reciting like Shakespeare here. I will go to the ring, but it was almost taken away from me. God, it's like theater class 101 here with Ilya. And then Braun enters and jokes that he will beat Ilya again. And then Jey Uso just walks in the shot, eyes Braun, and walks past him. And we didn't get the end to Ilya's monologue here.
No, I'm so sorry. But I'm loving your Dragunov.
I want to get more Ilya on the show. I think there's potential there. The Judgment Day do a promo, and Balor says, tonight was a message with everyone they took out, and it's not going to be close to what happens at Bad Blood. And JD McDonagh warns the New Day that the tag division belongs to us. Not a whole lot of people reaching for that ring for ownership. No. But anyway, we will get a rare tag title match next week, along with the return of CM Punk. So that's the amount of time. We'll take him off TV for a week, and we got a cell match to promote.
Come on, dude. Like, MJF took a Tiger Driver 91, okay? He's probably going to be gone after this week, after taking a pile driver from the second rope. But wrestlers have very good regenerative abilities.
Maybe he got stem cells over the week in his throat.
Very sure, yes.
And the main event was Jey Uso, Ilya Dragunov, Pete Dunne, and Braun Strowman to determine who gets a shot at Braun Breaker. They have not stated when that will take place. Dunn attacks Braun's ribs, and then Braun runs at Dunn, misses, and goes into the barricade. And this was a match of just coming up with clever ways to get rid of Braun Strowman for prolonged periods of time, and then he would come back to life. They teamed up, sending Braun into the steps, so that was a good 5 minutes he was gone. Ilya goes for a coast-to-coast dropkick, and Jay hits him with a super kick in midair to prevent it. Dunn, at some point, gets busted up here, had some blood, and he snaps the fingers of Ilya when Braun is back to life again and shoves Dunn off the top to the floor and fires up, and he rips off his sob shirt and then tries the freight train. The best of this freight train was he was too far out from Jay, so he reached out and he like hit him with his hand and Jay flew. And then the rest took like,
well, when you're running, it adds so much more power just even to, you know, like the mere touch of somebody is enough to knock them over.
It was, it was enough. Jay did him a solid here. Then the best spot of the entire match is Braun has taken out everyone with the freight train and he clears the desk and he turns around and this giant is in the air. This was shot so well. He came out of nowhere and he just jumps in the air and flattens Braun as the table explodes. This was awesome. This was just such a great visual. This was like you've got an entire opening of Raw just of Bronson Reed spots that look visually spectacular.
Oh, this was absolutely fantastic. I think everybody expected Bronson Reed to make his return somehow and cost Braun the match here. I did not expect them to figure out such a clever way of doing it. I mean, it's pretty hard to hide like a 300 pound man, but they somehow managed to find a way, at least on camera, to hide him and to have him appear in spectacular fashion, delivering a tsunami to Braun Strowman through a table. Wonderfully executed moment.
Yeah. And, you know, if we were really pushing the envelope, he would have gotten down and said, "And I've still got COVID, Braun."
Oh, man.
No.
God.
He was okay. I couldn't have imagined this was going to be the match that Bronson was in. I can't envision Braun doing that spot verbatim the other way around. I'm sure it would have been.
No, it actually worked out a lot better.
So Braun is down, and that is all for Braun in the whole match. And Jay and Ilya fight in the ring. Jay ducks a boot, spears him, but then Dunn throws him out, tries to steal the cover. But Dunn is the bitter end gets stopped as Ilya hits a powerbomb, H-bomb, but Jay stops it by super kicking Ilya out of the ring and hits an Uso splash to pin Pete Dunne, and Jay Uso will get the IC title shot, and the show ended with Braun Breaker entering the ring for a stare down for a match sometime in the future.
I could see this one being on TV. You know, like it's a TV needs big matches, and I don't think they'll be doing a Gunther title defense. So Jay versus Braun as a TV match, I think, is worthwhile. It's one where I don't necessarily see Jay winning because I think Braun is still just, you know, in the stages of picking up steam as part of this run and establishing himself. But I think it's a pretty big TV match. You know, this match I thought was great. You know, everybody came across very impressive, tremendous atmosphere here in Calgary. I absolutely love the way that they reintroduced Reed. And again, you know, I don't know what the initial plans might have been for this match involved Bronson Reed, but I think they've done a great job dealing with that COVID diagnosis to turn this into, I would say, like a pretty strong angle thus far with Reed and Braun Strowman, and Braun Strowman now really kind of elevating himself in these past couple weeks with a significant role.
Yeah, I think that's another like great TV match. I think that really opens things when you're limiting these pay-per-views to 5 matches. And just looking at the calendar, next week's Portland, and then in 2 weeks they're in Ontario, California, which is a very big market for them. And I could see them putting at least one of these matches on that show that they designed here. So a lot coming out of this show. There was a lot of news to this show. Nothing bigger than the 2-hour Raw coming in a month. October 7th cannot come fast enough. I feel I'm way more excited about this than you are.
I'm very excited for it, John.
Oh my God,
yeah,
dude.
I guess I just know not to get so excited because I'm not sure about like what January holds for us.
You know what? January is January. We get 13 weeks away that I'm going to be very happy when I'm talking to you at 10:05 p.m.
Right. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious to see how they structure the show differently.
Oh, it's going to be different. Like, you know, SmackDown is a good like outline of like what you can expect from this show. And there's
Raw has been consistently a better show than SmackDown. Now, how much of that is thanks to the 3 hours versus just the roster and the quality of the writing on the show? Well, I guess we'll find out.
All right. Just your overall thoughts on the show.
I thought it was a good show. I think Calgary was a tremendous crowd. I loved the Sami Zayn, Gunther, Bret Hart segment. Probably my highlight of the entire thing, especially Gunther's lines about Bill Goldberg. Hilarious. I thought the wrestling on the show was pretty good, you know, starting with the eight person street fight that I thought received a tremendous reaction. And then, of course, it's closing with the four-way here. All of it, I think, very effective. You know, coming off of SmackDown, I often just feel like it's just like I didn't really need to watch this show in order to keep up with storylines. I wasn't necessarily entertained by the show, but I felt like even that 3 hours, like Raw is really doing a great job of building new talent and giving you like satisfying segments.
All right, we're going to go to the feedback at forum.postwrestling.com, and you can send in your super chats.
Yeah. First of all, let's go to Nice Salmons, who sends $5. Thank you very much, Nice Salmons. Who said Bret Hart is eternally bitter? Nexus tried to kill him with repeated car crashes. There is hope for him and Goldberg. Yeah. Well, some grudges somehow only get worse, but we don't know what the Nexus said to him off camera. You know, maybe they said some really nice words into his ears. So thank you very much, Nice Salmons.
Let's go to Jeremy in Texas. Who knew that the most newsworthy item coming out of Raw would be easily missed if you weren't paying attention coming back from a break? I had to rewind and check if I misheard. Before I ask about the celebration of 13 glorious weeks of two-hour shows, were you surprised to see Bret agree to go back to WWE programming since he's never really been a fan of Triple H? Could they have offered more than just the hero's welcome he'd get in Calgary? I wasn't surprised in the least. He's got a deal with WWE, and if he's called upon, he's going to do the shows. I don't see that being any kind of issue in the least. That's enough about tonight's Raw. I want to know the early plans for John and Wayne, knowing that they have one less hour of wrestling to watch.
We must have really complained about these three-hour Raws for like the past 12 years because people are thankful. They're very kind in wishing us well. I don't think our lives are going to be that significantly different.
All the options a Monday night at midnight present for us. All the things we could do at that time.
Let's go to Muggin, who says, I only had time for the street fight, the baller main event. Gunther telling Bret that Goldberg is his favorite. I bet he'll give the champ get a 4 out of 10 for saying that. And the show returning to a 2-hour format in October. I've gotten so used to the 3-hour format for years that I hope WWE takes the right lessons from it so that it won't suffer the same issues that plague SmackDown lately.
We go to Nas from New York. WWE deserves a lot of shit for a lot of things, like signing Hulk Hogan for 5 years. Indefensible. However, this is the greatest gift they've given us. The end of the 3-hour tyranny. Surely this continues on to Netflix, right? Assuming this does continue on Netflix, who at TKO do you think pushed for this? We know it wasn't Nick Khan. Would Triple H have that much sway? This raises so many questions. My only worry is that the one less hour of TV would lead to talent cuts, would be very typical of WWE. If there are any alterations, Netflix is spending the money, you know what I mean? It's like they are going to have as much, you know, directional input as possible. They're the ones signing the check. WWE is accepting the check.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be anybody from TKO's call. I do think, as John was sort of discussing off the top, probably just a factor of the deal. And maybe just a budgetary concern for USA, because I think USA would have been happy to have a 3-hour show at the price that they were paying. Let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, I heard about the tragic loss of the Goudreau brothers more directly than I expected to, not because I follow hockey, but because it happened in New Jersey and was a top story on my local news. Taking the time to remember them on Raw tonight was wonderful. Rest in peace to them and to James Earl Jones. Yes, who also passed away.
Yes.
Great use of Bret Hart tonight in building up Gunther versus Sami Zayn. Fun surprise return for Bronson Reed. Is this the first Hell in a Cell match this year? I believe it would be. Yeah. I don't think they pulled the stipulation outside of that pay-per-view. And it's happening on a show not called Hell in a Cell. Well, I mean, Bad Blood kind of really did, like, you know.
But they got rid of Hell in a Cell, so
But I'm just saying, like, Brad Blood immediately makes you think of Sean Taker anyway. That's refreshing and a potentially strong end to this feud. Tonight's Raw flew by for me, either because I liked what they were doing tonight or other circumstances, like pausing the show to read articles on Post and skipping past commercials, which I should do more often. The Raw is shorter announcement. It was the best news of the night, happening during the time they originally weren't set to be on USA. Hoping it becomes the constant and not just a special exception.
Okay, we go to Ani. Rest in peace to the Goodrow brothers and James Earl Jones. Thoughts and prayers with their loved ones. Quite enjoyed this Raw. The Brett-Sammy-Gunther deal was very entertaining. The opening street fight wasn't as enjoyable as it would have been had I not watched All Out, but it was good for what it was. I think anyone who is coming off that, it was going to fall quite short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Fatal 4-Way, however, I got into this. The Jay Rhea connection is an example of the care they've put into their character arcs. This was the seed that they planted when Jay was feuding with Judgment Day last year, and something they've been able to pick up while delighting the audience. However, in addition to the Brett segment, shouldn't they have also done an angle where Drew laid out Brett in Calgary? That was an opportunity to do an all-time iconic heat angle.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing physicality with Brett anymore, not at this age. They barely did it, like, in the past. I think we would have had, like, low blows that would have looked, that looked comically bad. But at this point, I'm fine with them not doing much physicality.
No, I don't think you need to be doing physical stuff with Brett, and I don't really think it's kind of... You can do whatever angles you want, but I think for tonight they wanted to just present Brett as the big hero in Calgary and not just go for the easy heat. But there's also, I think, the physical limitations that would not have been a great idea. But thank you anyway for the feedback as well, everyone. That is it for us. And we're going to be back Tuesday night. Braden and Davey are coming at you after the, is it the season premiere of NXT? No, it's WWE week.
Well, hold on a second. Like, isn't there a season premiere for everything? Like,
well, I think they're promoting their move to CW as their big show. I don't know if that's the season premiere. I don't know. Okay. It's a loaded up NXT regardless. So, if you're watching that or the debate, those are your options. Or Madam Web. You have many different options for Tuesday night. Everyone get ready for MCU Hater featuring Wei Ting on Wednesday as he gives his thoughts for the first time sitting down to watch Madam Web, which sounds like an atrocious film, but Wei's taking one for the team.
In some ways, I am looking forward to it. Looking forward to reuniting with those guys, as I'm looking forward to reuniting with you, John, in person on Thursday for the latest edition of Pollock and Ting Talk. What will we be discussing? Find out.
Tune in on Thursday. We don't know, but we will have something to talk about on Thursday. That's it for us. Check out the site. Check out postwrestlingcafe.com. And that is it for us. Good night.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.